السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته. بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. الحمد لله رب العالمین و صلی الله علی محمد و آله الطاهرین. First of all, I would like to offer my congratulations on the birth anniversary of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam upon you, brothers and sisters. They've asked me to speak for a few minutes. Inshallah, I won't take too much of your time. There's a verse in the Holy Quran in reference to Amir al-Mu'mineen, which reads, إِنَّمَا وَلِيُّكُمُ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا الذين يقيمون الصلاة ويؤتون الزكاة وهم راكعون. That your wali is Allah, his messenger, and those who believe. Now those who believe are those who establish their prayer, not just recite their prayer, they have to establish it, but I don't want to enter that area here. And give the zakat whilst in the position of ruku. Now, this is in reference to a historic incident, and that is the dhahir, the outer meaning of the verse, referring to a needy person who was instructed by the Holy Messenger to go to ask from Amir al-Mu'mineen. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam was praying, and then in a state of ruku, he gave his ring to the needy person. Now, the first thing is that when the question of zakat arises, those who limit religion to fiqh and jurisprudence, when they see zakat, they limit it to the 9 items which are assigned zakat in fiqhi terms. However, although this was a historic incident and it did happen, we have to see how does the giving of a ring apply in relation or qualify in relation to zakat. And then we have to see whether zakat has other meanings, other inner, batini, esoteric meanings, which Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam had. And attaining to the inner meanings of zakat, that would be much difficult. Otherwise, me and you can also give a ring to a needy person whilst praying. But on the outside, it may look the same as Amir al-Mu'mineen's giving of a ring. But that which distinguishes the two superficially similar actions is that Amir al-Mu'mineen, yu'tuna zakat, in relation to him, he was a giver of the zakat, but also in the esoteric sense. And that's very difficult. All aspects of the Sharia have batini meanings. If you confine religion only to the Sharia, to the outer meanings, you're limiting yourself, your religion. So I want to, in the next few minutes, just share with you a passage from a mystic of 600 years ago, 700 years ago, Sayyid Haydar Omoli. He has a book, Asrar al-Sharia wal-Tariqa wal-Haqiqa. And before I read from it, and I was planning to read the Arabic and then translate, but now they've told me only 30 minutes. I'll, with your permission, just go through the English translation. But before I read from the actual text, there's something I want to, as a preface to the text, so we can digest it easier, is that what the words of the Holy Quran, they're assigned a universal essence of a meaning. And then that essential meaning can have numerous applications. And as long as those applications don't go against the Quran, against Aql, then they hold. But if you look at one word of the Quran and your approach is that it only has one meaning and no other, your tafsir is going to be a very dry tafsir. So for example, when you see zakat in the Holy Quran, if you limit it to the fiqhi zakat, you've lost the plot. Because it won't mean too much. And action-wise, practical-wise, you just read something as a fiqhi point, as a historical point, whereas the Quran is telling you to be an esoteric zakat giver also. So here you have to understand, what does zakat mean? Every time salat comes in the Quran, we see it's accompanied most times with and give the zakat. So, but here in our day-to-day lives today, if someone tells you, well, do you give your zakat? You say no. Well, you failed. Why? Because you thought zakat was only those 9 items. I don't have those 9 items, so zakat doesn't apply to me. And then you've lived a lifetime zakat-lessly, and you've wasted yourself. So in this passage, it wants to open up what zakat, the esoteric meaning, what it entails. But before that, let's see what the root, universal, essential meaning of zakat is. The author of At-Tahqiq fi Kalamat al-Quran al-Kareem, the late Allama Sayyid Hassan Mustafawi, when it comes to zakat, he goes through all the root words of the Quran. He says, as I say, I wanted to read the Arabic here, but because of limited time, I'll just quickly go through it. It's the discarding, the removing of that which is not haqq from haqq. This removing of that which is not haqq from haqq, that process of removing is zakat. And then he gives examples, such as the elimination of vicious attributes from the heart. Look, you're removing that which is non-haq, vicious attributes, from the heart, which is the bearer of virtuous attributes. So even the removing of vicious attributes from the heart, it's one application of zakat. Another example he gives, the author, the removing of bad actions from a human spiritual program of suluk, like a human lifestyle, how a Muslim wants to live, removing the negative items, that is also zakat. And the third example is the discarding or removing of huquq al-nas anil mal, from your property, from your belongings, that percentage which is not yours, belongs to others, like the needy, or with khums, for example, for those categories of those who deserve khums. That removal of that percentage of wealth from your own belongings, that removing again, this is also an application of zakat. So here also khums would fall into that. The ring Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam gave would fall into this. It was the property of the belonging of the needy. It was their right. He gives these 3 examples. Now, that was just as an introduction. Now, Sayyid Haydar Amali, he says that zakat, according to the Ahlul Tariqa, those who focus on, in addition to the outer aspects of the Sharia, in addition to that, and they don't negate that, they also focus on the inner dimensions, the bodily dimensions of the Sharia. These people, they define zakat as tazkiyatun nafs and radhilatil bukhl. It's the removal from the nafs, removing what? The vice of miserliness, stinginess, bukhl. What, he continues with the definition, and it's the purification of the heart from the contamination of the Arabic word shuh. Now, here, the author of the book, At-Tahqiq, he says the difference between bukhl and shuh. Bukhl is that miserliness. But when miserliness, stinginess, reaches a certain threshold where it permeates and becomes incorporated and becomes second nature into your soul, then that's called shuh now. And then he says, this has been mentioned in the Quran, this shuh, in the verse, chapter 59, verse 9, وَمَنْ يُوقَ شُحَّ نَفْسِهِ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. That those who are saved from that extensive miserliness of the soul, they're saved from it, they've removed it. These people are the saved ones. They have reached falah. They have reached salvation. Once this tazkiyah happens, and look in the Quran, man qad aflaha man zakkaha, or qad aflaha man tazakka. Look, those who give zakat of the soul, zakkaha, the ha goes back to the previous verse. Once you give zakat of the soul, you are one of the saved ones. Salvation is yours. You've attained to salvation. So this is something very important here. It's not only a question of zakat of 9 items, which may apply to you, may not, doesn't matter. But you can be the bodily giver of zakat. So this giving of zakat of the soul is important here. And falah has been attributed to zakat. We don't see it in the Quran attributed to salat. Why? Because true zakat is a true prerequisite and preliminary for a proper salat. And then he writes that after this purification of the heart, Allah has referred to the multiple and extensive fruits and benefits and blessings, namely knowledge, the realities of the cosmos, ma'rifah, the finer points, metaphysical points, which our perceptions are limited in relation to. These are the fruits that one can gain if the miserliness of the soul is removed. And he mentions this verse of the Quran, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ الْحَبَّةِ. The example of one who does infaq of one's belongings, فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ, is the example of a grain. The word infaq, the root word is nafaqa, which means a perishing, an elimination of something, a shortage, an absence of something. But nafaqa enters, and your scholars here, all, just like you should all know, as seminary students, it enters a certain paradigm of a morphological Salafi paradigm of if'al, then it becomes infaq. This paradigm of if'al has 20 meanings. One of them is, it takes the root word and it reverses it. And the scholars, with the word infaq, I said, this nafaqa, there's a shortage, absence of something, you're reversing it, i.e. you're filling that absence. You're filling the lacuna. And that's why with infaq, it's not just a case of giving, It's a giving which is based on you looking at your environment, what the true shortage is in your society, and then filling the gaps, so to speak. So, an example of those who give in fog, the example of those who give in fog, of their belongings. So there's no miserliness here. And they do it fi sabilillah. It means the act has to be a good act and the khulus has to be there. Otherwise, fi sabilillah will be compromised. This is the example of the grain. Then it continues. Anbatat sab'a sanabil, it sprouts 7 spikes. This one grain. Fi kulli sumbulatin mi'atu habba. And then in every spike, there's 100 grains. Wallahu yudha'ifu liman yasha. Then Allah makes it manifold. Manifold at least means 2 and more. So if it's 2, that one action, then it's now 1,400 times you get the reward. But 2 is the minimum, the maximum, it has no end. Wallahu wasi'un alim. Then Sayyid Haydar Omani writes, and to elaborate on this is extensive, but he's going to try and do it. He says, and it's tantamount to this, that the salik, the traveler to Allah, when he removes from his heart the attribute of miserliness and grows instead of it the attribute of giving, and that generosity, giving. Here it's acquired, he will acquire other attributes which you can't count its numerous branches. They are so much. And they include ma'arif, knowledge, and ma'rifah, and haqa'iq. The minimum you acquire is salvation and savior. From what? Salvation and savior from the vicious attributes, the ethical vices. And then with ethical vices, he says, التي هي الموجبة للدخول في الجحيم المعنوية دون السورية. This is a very key statement. You will be saved from those ethical vices. Which ethical vices? Those which lead you to enter the spiritual hell, not the formal hell. I'll explain that in a minute. So here you see he's divided hell. Now since Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, in his Adab al-Namaz, has also opened this up and has given a commentary to this very golden principle here, that we have a hell of actions, but we have a hell of ethics. He says, with giving that zakat and abolishing that miserliness, you will receive a lot of haqa'iq, ma'arif, and so on and so forth, and you would be freed from those ethical vices. Ethical vices which make you enter the hell of ethics, not the hell of action. Then he says, because this hell of action only happens after the hell of ethics. Now what does all this mean? Here, Imam Khomeini has explained this, and he says that those ethical vices that become second nature in you are the cause and the precursor to you failing in relation to the Sharia. Okay? When you commit a Sharia sin, the precursor was that you were contaminated with the ethical vices. That's why you committed a Sharia sin. Look, if I with my hand, God forbid, commit a sin and drink something halal, if they were to say to me, well, why did you intentionally, knowing this was haram, why did you commit this action? You would say, I intended it, I willed it. If they were to say to you, why did you will and intend to commit such an action? You would say, I had an emphatic joy to do such a thing. There was a joy that made me do this. If they were to say to you, why did you have such a joy to make you intend to then commit that sin? You would say, because I analyzed it and saw benefit in it. When you analyze something and you see it's for your benefit, then seeing it's of benefit, then you will have joy, then you will intend it, then you will do it. If they were to say to you, so why did you analyze it and then get benefit from your scrutinizing this action? Where did that come from? You would say, I conceived of it. And if they were telling you, why did you even conceive of such a thing? The answer to this, the scholars of the Tariqa, what they say, it's all traced back to your inner dispositions. Those attributes which have become incorporated in you. Because of what you have incorporated, you conceive of something. Then you analyze it. You see benefit in it. Then you have joy out of the benefit. Then you intend it. Then you commit it. Now, it may be a good action, it may be a bad. It depends on your inner dispositions. Imam Khomeini is saying, the hell of actions is one thing, but the hell of ethics is much more severe. Because that is the precursor to you committing a sin of the Sharia. And then he says, it's much higher, the hell of action, ethics, is much higher, and it's more burning than the hell of actions. Look, let's say I am incorporated with these ethical vices. It's second nature within me. But I don't commit a Sharia sin. Okay? Here, such a person will go to the hell of ethics, which is very burning. Since they never committed a Sharia sin, they won't go to the hell of action. But will they go to the heaven of action? The answer is no. Because the hell of ethics has inhibited their entrance into heaven. Look how suddenly things become different here. This is one of the benefits of zakat. That an imam, since I actually did translate this part of Imam's book, the translation is, so the purification of the zahir, which is Sharia requiring, depends on the purification of the batin. Furthermore, the batini, those ethical vices, contaminations, lead to, act as a precursor to, the suppression of salvation, and is the cause of the hell of actions. This is a precursor to that, which according to the people of Ma'rifah, is higher and more burning than the hell of actions. Okay, so that's one part. If you just, when I have 5 minutes, if you just let me know so I can know how to end it. And then, Sayyid Haydar Omani continues. And now the example of the giving infaq of your belongings, fi sabilillah, this has been compared to the grain. And it's been compared to the spikes. And this, he says, is very according. Because every attribute that the traveler to Allah incorporates, be it praiseworthy or blameworthy, it leads to innumerous number of attributes. One grain, which is buried in earth, can sprout, and a numerous number of spikes can come out. In every spike, many grains and so on and so forth. And he mentions that verse again. And he says this is very evident for the rational person. Then he starts giving some of the wisdoms of Zakat. He says that the secrets of Zakat, after we've established that Zakat in the Sharia, is to spend it on for the needy. There are 8 classes where you spend the fiqhi Zakat. For the needy, to resolve reconciliation, for example. Those things which are in the best interest of the masses, like bridges, roads, and so on and so forth. He says that, and then he answers a hidden question. That if resolving Zakat is spent for the resolving of disputes between couples or two parties, well, you can do nasiha and advise them. Why give the Zakat? Why give them, actually give something when through advice and counseling you can cover many of these problems? So what's the secret of having to give? He says, لِأَنَّ الْمَالَ, verily one's wealth and properties, are one's beloved things. One's belongings or one's beloved things. It's very, one loves one's belongings. At the same time, one is responsible to exercise love before Allah. That is our duty as potential Khalifatullahs. Now, we love belongings, but we have to also, we're assigned to have love of Allah. That's perfection for us. And we claim that love merely by saying we have iman. Therefore, Allah has assigned a criterion in relation to the people's love. He's given a criterion and an examination to see whether this truthfulness of their claim in loving Allah. And here enter zakat. And that's why sadaqat is used interchangeably with zakat, because it comes from sidq. You have to be truthful in your claim, and you have to give. When you give, you're truthful that your that love you have for Allah is real. Then he says, he mentions an important principle again, that loved things are offered in the name of a greater love, a greater thing whose love has predominated the heart. For example, you have money and you want good health. When your health is compromised, since health is a greater love for you than money, the lower loved thing, money, is offered. So the lower loved things are offered in line and in name of that loved thing which has predominated your heart. That's it's a principle here. Now, if you have love of Allah, then when the order to give zakat happens, you would do it without any ifs or buts. All degrees of zakat. Monetary is just one example. And he says then, it's wajib upon the giver, however, to be careful. Be careful of what? Be careful of al-man. Reminders of the favors that you're doing. The mu'ti, the giver, the offerer of zakat, has to be careful though. You're doing it for Allah's sake. Be careful you don't enter this domain of keep on reminding people, I gave you this, to the person who has received it. Because the reality of such a reminder is that you see yourself as a do-gooder, as a muhsin, one who does good towards the needy person, but you whilst seeing yourself as superior to that person. That's a very delicate trap one has to be careful not to fall into when you give zakat, whatever form of it, that you don't then remind them or see yourself superior to them. Then he says, wa alamatuhu. Now I'll give you a sign to see whether you've already fallen into this trap. He gives two signs. One is that you expect them to thank you, but you get offended when they don't thank you. This shows that you didn't do it for Allah. It wasn't fi sabilillah then. It wasn't for Allah's sake. The second is that any shortcomings they committed against you, you deem it as unpleasant, but even more unpleasant than when they did the same shortcoming before you gave the sadaqah. So for example, before, when you said to them salam, for example, it's not a good example, but if you say salam to them and they didn't reply, you become disappointed because they didn't commit a wajib action, and it may be, yes. Then you gave them a sadaqah or a zakat. And after that, when you said salam alaykum to them and they didn't reply, you become more, you see this as more unpleasant. Looking at it in a more unpleasant manner, becoming more irritated, it shows that you fell in the trap of man and that you've lost the plot again. Or for example, it says their friendship with your enemies. Before they were friends with your enemies, it was unpleasant to you. Then you gave them zakat later. And then after giving zakat, again, days later, weeks later, whatever. Yes, thank you. Then, again, now you become more irritated that they are friends with your enemies. Look, it's very delicate, very dharif. Here you can tell that, no, the zakat I gave, I've lost the plot. And then he mentions the verse, لَا تُبْتَلُوا صَدَقَاتِكُمْ بِالْمَنِّ وَالْأَذَى بِالْمَنِّ, by reminding them. Don't invalidate, don't nullify your sadaqah, your zakat, by reminding them, and so on and so forth. And he went through the signs. Okay, now, since I've come to the end, then he keeps on continuing, going through different procedures. Then, at the end, he speaks of those who give the most beloved thing that they have, fi sabilillah. That's a zakat. That's the ultimate zakat. And he says, what is that? It's one's soul, one's life. وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتًا بَلْ أَحْيَاءٌ عِنْدَ رَبِّهِمْ يُرْزَقُونَ. Here, those who give their life for Allah's sake. Now that doesn't mean you have to die. It's the protocol of shahada, of dying for Allah's sake. The protocol of giving your life for Allah. We all have to have such a protocol, but we may never become martyr. It's possible. It doesn't matter. You're an esoteric martyr. Someone like Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, let's say he was never protected with the gods and everything. They would have killed him very quickly. He would have been assassinated. He was well protected. He was someone who was a true shaheed, but he was living. He gave his life for Allah's sake. 100%. But it happened that he wasn't killed. That doesn't matter. He was a living shaheed. That's more important. Sometimes someone may not give their inner zakat completely. They may give 80%. They've removed 80% of the ethical vices. Or they haven't given their soul completely. But they go to physical war in battle and they become martyred. That's very noble. But it was 80%. It was 60%. The point I'm trying to make is, even if you don't die in a war, the potential is there. If you live a life of shahada, now you may become martyred, you may not. But that's when you truly are ready to give your life, fi sabilillah. That he calls the ultimate zakat. Okay. Thank you for your patience. It was an honor to be invited here. And inshallah, Allah will grant us the success to become true givers of zakat. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala ta'ala.